Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I'm in shorts and flip-flops. It's about 70 degrees outside. I have a full tank of propane in my grill. It's a beautiful day outside. The Masters are on. There's baseball on TV.
We even have the door to the studio
the
open.
The door
right
to
now.
The studio's open.
If you hear a dog barking, that's our neighbor.
I had to wear sunglasses on the way in. Spring's officially here, and it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I love it. So good morning, New York, and welcome on in to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. And we do have Bruce. If you thought you were going to get tired of listening to this voice, we have Bruce on. He is live from Augusta and the Masters. Bruce, is it as beautiful down there as it is me here sitting in flip-flops?
Well, you know what? Yesterday and the day before that, there was virtually not a cloud in the sky. Today, there is some cloud cover, which is good because when the sun is out here, it gets hot. Now, I will say this. I've been a lot hotter than I've been the last couple of days. I want to say it's going to be 83, 84 today.
That's gorgeous.
There was virtually no wind yesterday. Yesterday was a day when some people actually threw some decent scores up. The first 2 days for a Masters, in my opinion, were almost weird. The course on Thursday beat the crap out of everybody. The pin placements were tough. It was a 5.5 hour round. There was not a lot of cheering going on. And we're going to talk about this throughout the show, but the lack of one Eldrick Tiger Woods at this tournament makes all the difference in the world. Just him being at the Masters creates excitement because he's like never out of it. You know what I mean? And he always has the biggest following. There's been some decent followings this week, but nothing like Tiger Woods. And I've talked to some people in the golf business this week, and several people who elected to go nameless, obviously, said that all the other players on the tour should just give him 10-20% of their money, because that's how much of an impact he's had to the entire tour.
Speaking of Tiger Woods, yeah, he's not there, but we do have a very star-studded top of this leaderboard where there's a lot of big names. But so you say that it has that big impact, but is there a lot of fans out there? I mean, I know that you said that they had to kick fans out the other day because of the weather got bad, but I'm hearing that there's a ton of people out there that are all dressed in that Ricky Fowler Puma, that highlighter colors. So is it that noticeable of a difference that Tiger's not there based solely on the fans?
No, not really. I mean, there's always going to be, somewhere in the 60,000 range here. The patrons, as they're called at Augusta National, it's the same number of tickets pretty much every year. Same number of badges get printed. Not sure what's going on with dailies. Augusta National Golf Club they've become very hospitality oriented as of late, and they should. This is their event. This is their club. People like me for the past 25, 30 years have done a pretty good job of bringing people down here for their first time and, making a living off of events like this. It's only right, I guess, that the National get involved in it. And they continue to build these phenomenal, buildings on site where you have to have a special ticket to get in. I don't even think anybody can buy them. I think you have to be associated with a sponsor of the tournament. And there's a lot of different ways you can get in, but no, the people are here. We started to hear them yesterday. We'll hear it today. Today will be a big day because you got Bubba Watson on the leaderboard. He's at the top. You got Jordan Spieth, you know, the new Tiger Woods. You know, Jordan Spieth, you know, they were talking on the nice thing about being down here, 24/7 golf coverage. I mean, on every station.
Right.
All the best golf people in the world. And one of the greatest things I heard, and I'm going to steal it and say it over and over again until people get tired of it, is that, you know, when Adam Scott came along, people talk about Adam Scott had Tiger's swing. Jordan Spieth has Tiger's putting stroke when he was young. And I'm going to tell you, this kid is unbelievable. I mean, if he wins this tournament, I wouldn't be a little bit surprised. I think he's got a shot. I think Matt Kuchar is the guy that I think is going to win. I think Freddie Couples probably will put up another higher score today, and he'll fall back. If Freddie could play 54 holes, he'd be a lot better off because he's 56 years old. You know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the young guns in golf. And this youth upbringing, we had Rory a couple of years ago that everyone was pointing to be the next great thing, and he's been fantastic. He's out of it this tournament. But when you think about the young guns in golf, you think about the group who called themselves the young guns, that being led by Mr. Bubba Watson. They've kind of revolutionized the game, brought it more towards the youth factor. If Bubba wins another Masters, does that officially put him on the spot in that whole golf... those golf boys, as they call themselves, does that put them in control of golf with Tiger's absence?
Well, I think what it does is it serves notice that Bubba Watson is a great player. He hits shots nobody else hits. He doesn't have a swing coach because, in Bubba's words, why do I want a swing coach? Nobody wants to deal with this swing, you know? I don't want anybody messing with it. I'm having fun, you know, kind of play. You know, he taught himself how to play golf, basically.
Yeah.
You know, this kid Jonas Blix from Sweden, Blix, B-L-I-X-T,
mm-hmm.
This kid a lot of people are picking. He's going out 70-71-71. You know, he is in the next to the last group with Matt Kuchar. A lot of people think the winner of that twosome today will probably walk away with a green jacket. And you know what? I don't doubt him. Miguel Angel Jimenez, if you go to either sportsmancave.com or brucehallsports.com. Don't we have a video of this guy doing these triple X rated warm-ups?
Yeah, it'll be up shortly if it's not up already. There's that guy, his warm-ups are great.
He shot the best round yesterday. He went out yesterday, shot 66. This is a 50-year-old man. You don't have to be tremendously long here to be successful. You have to be excellent around the greens, and you have to be able to putt. I would say step meter-wise, Roy, mm-hmm. right now, these things are like glass. They're like 14 and a half, 15. You're going to see balls today roll off greens. You know, that somebody thinks they made a good putt, and they're going to end up four putting. It's tough. It's really tough. Justin Rose has a shot. Jimmy Furyk, I picked Furyk as one of my top five guys before the tournament started. Jimmy Furyk is right now 200 par to 214, and he's only three strokes back. And Jimmy Furyk has never won the Masters. This would probably top off his career, in my opinion. It would be great.
So two off the leaderboard sits Ricky Fowler, and he basically – is the face of Puma Golf. He's a crowd favorite with the younger kids and the I guess you could say the future of golf. He shot a 67 yesterday, which was the second best behind Jimenez. What chances do you give Ricky Fowler today?
I think he's got a chance. I mean, if you had to give him a percentage chance, I'd say Ricky's got a 10% chance. I saw him hit driver on 18 yesterday. It was the best shot I saw all day. He hit a driver perfectly straight with a slight draw over the pine trees, probably 325. And he parred 18, but I heard it was a tap in. He was like 15 feet from the pin. Now, 18 is going to be tough today. It's going to be the normal place where it is, you know, lower front right. 17 is going to be tough. 16 is going to be easy. You know, you're going to see eagle putts on 15. Bubba hit a shot. he had a drive on 15 yesterday that they said was the longest drive they'd seen there in 5 years.
Wow. Well, for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and to protect home ownership. On the other side, we'll be right back with Bruce Hall talking some more Masters Golf on this beautiful spring day.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
So one of the best stories of this Masters weekend has to have come yesterday in a pairing with Rory McIlroy. Now, if you want to look up the leaderboard and you want to look up the pairings from yesterday, you're going to find that Rory was paired with nobody. But in fact, he was paired with somebody, and the guy's name is Jeff Knox. Jeff Knox is an Augusta National member, but he's not a competitor in the field. Now, Bruce, Jeff outshot Rory by one stroke. First, who is Jeff Knox, and why doesn't he show up on my leaderboard?
Well, you know, from what I understand from the guys I talked to around here, Jeff is an outstanding amateur golfer, and he is a member. He's been a member of the club for several years. I want to say Jeff's pushing 50. I've seen him play as a marker at least 4 or 5 times in the last 10, 15 years. And he does a great job. And let me tell you what a marker's job is. Marker's job is not to get in the way. You know, a marker's job is basically just to give the odd player. For example, the way that you make the cut now at Augusta currently, and it's changed from time to time over the years. It used to be that only the top 44 players after Thursday, Friday rounds and ties came back on Saturday. Didn't matter if the 10 stroke rule meant nothing. Does that make sense to you? That's mm-hmm. The PGA rule. They make their own rules here at Augusta National. And what they were finding, Roy, was that on Sunday mornings, a lot of times they were getting 44, 45, 46, and that's only, you know, 22, 23, 24 pairings. They weren't having to tee off until after 11 a.m. So what they did was they decided to try to keep a little bigger field. Now they've changed the 44 number to 50, so the top 50 in ties come. Or within 10 strokes of the lead, whichever is more. This year it was more being 50-plus ties. Now, when you have an odd number, 53, 55, you need somebody's going to play alone. And that was the case yesterday with Rory. And that was also the case today. Larry Mize just teed it up 10 minutes ago with one Jeff Knox, I would imagine. Now, yesterday, I was on number two when Jeff was playing against Rory, and Jeff hit his second shot on the front, under the front of the green, which is a par five. He stepped up, literally, it was just off the green, maybe 2 feet, and he pulled a wedge out, and I swear he didn't even take a practice swing, just kind of played it off his back foot, punched it up. It was an average shot. He was still at about an 8-footer for birdie. But he went and marked and got out of the way. And Rory, of course, took his time, lined up his shot, missed his putt. Now it was Jeff's turn. Jeff knocked in an 8-footer, and there was a pretty big crowd applause, you know, for a 4. So he went 1 under right there, which was amazing.
Yeah, very cool.
But he's playing with Larry Mize today. And Larry Mize, to his credit, in 1987, Larry Mize knocked in a 145-foot playoff chip shot that was from far off the green on number 10 and rolled, hit the stick, and went in and beat Greg Norman. You know, Norman never won a Masters. And Norman was on the green in 2, right on the edge of the green. It looked like Mize was going to lose, and he won the tournament. That same Larry Mize, who's 40, Larry is 47 years old. He's an Augusta native, and he made the cut. He shot 74-72. He was only 2 over The cut line was plus +4 on Friday, and Mize is playing with Knox today.
So how important?
That's a great little story, really.
How important is it to know the course, though? Because Knox, obviously, he knows the course. He's a member there. You know, we see Bubba Watson at the top of the leaderboard, who's obviously won this before. Rory said about it. He said about Knox's performance. He said he obviously knows this place well and gets around it. I don't think I've ever seen anyone putt the greens as well as he does around here. He's really impressive. I was thinking about maybe getting him to read a few of my putts here. How important is it to win this thing and know the course and have played here before? I mean,
it's invaluable. It's invaluable because, listen, the guy, you know, the caddies here, Ben Crenshaw has used the same caddy ever since he won his first green jacket. And Ben ended up had a carry bag this time because his caddy that he uses every year has got to be almost 80 years old now. Mm-hmm. He's a big old guy. And I'm telling you, a lot of these new kids, and I call them kids because they're kids, who qualify for the Masters for the first time ever, they always bring their caddy, you know, because why would you, you know? But there's only one guy, one player, one PGA player, one player in the world that uses a caddy from Augusta National, and that's Ben Crenshaw. And I'm going to tell you, these kids that didn't get to practice on Monday because of the weather, I mean, you know, there was no practice on Monday, none. And then Tuesday, of course, it got better. And then Wednesday, you got the par 3 tournament, and a lot of guys got out. But these kids bring their caddies in, and they really don't have much of a clue on how everything breaks until they go out and try. Now, Rory said that he would have liked to have had Knox read some of his putts. Well, he would have been disqualified because even though he's a marker, he's not allowed to caddy for him.
Right.
You know? So he can't even make a recommendation on what he does. I mean, he could obviously under his breath, but he wouldn't.
Right.
But no, it makes all the difference in the world because even on number 2 green where I sit every year, where Louis Oosthuizen last year knocked in a double eagle, first one ever on that hole, a 2 on a 600-yard par 5. Even on that hole, you have to have local knowledge. The putts break uphill on that hole because the grain goes uphill, not downhill. And a lot of guys that are looking at it for the first time, they think the ball's going to come back. They're going to spin it and have it come down the hill. It doesn't happen. Or they think that the ball's going to break one way and it breaks exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. The guys that have been there, the best shot I saw on number 2 yesterday, Roy, mm-hmm. was from the Spaniard, Jose Maria Olafable, who's won 2 green jackets. He literally hit a putt so hard, you would have thought, oh, my God, that's off the green. It was like 45 feet, ended up about 2 inches under the hole. Hmm. Because he knew he was putting dead into the grain, so he had to hit it just as hard as you would hit it soft coming back. You know, it's unbelievable what you got to know. And that's what makes this tournament so great, because the more that you can come back and play, the better you're going to get, you know.
So the top of the leaderboard, let's look at the top of the leaderboard and who you believe has the best shot. And you already said that it was Kuchar. So what makes him your favorite today, and what gives him the best chance at winning?
Well, you know, Matt's been playing this course for 20 years. I want to say Kuch is probably 39, 40 years old now, almost. He's 38, 39. His dad was his caddy. He was like a U.S. amateur champ. He was an All-American at Georgia Tech. He came over here. Somehow he qualified. I don't know how he did it. He got a sponsor exemption, won a tournament somewhere, and he qualified for the Masters. And he's been playing this course for 20 years, and, you know, he's a very good golfer. I mean, Kuch is like, he's a Ryder Cup guy. You know, he's top 10 guy in the United States right now. He blew a big 5-6-stroke lead a week ago or 2 weeks ago, or he wins that tournament. You know, mm-hmm. I listened to the interview last night. I think he's ready. I you know, and I think he knows exactly how to pace himself. He knows these Sunday pin placements better than anybody, because there are going to be a lot of the pin placements are going to be the same. If you're watching number 2 green, if you're seeing all of the Masters, you know, they're going to fire at the middle of the green, and the ball's literally going to roll 60 feet towards the cup. there's going to be a lot of birdies today on two. Number one has been incredibly hard all week. There's been several double bogeys there from some very good golfers. Three has played fairly tough. Four is a monster. I think it was playing 240 yesterday. Par three, uphill, big bunkers, just incredible breaks on the green. Five's always tough. Six is always tough. Phil triple bogeyed seven the other day.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a tiny little green. Eight's easier. Eight, the long hitters usually birdie it. They have a birdie putt or even an eagle putt. And nine's tough because it's straight uphill on your approach. Now, it's going to be great. I like Cooch's chances. I like Jimmy Furyk's chances. I'm throwing Bubba Watson out.
Oh, that's my boy.
Just like you would with a horse.
Yeah. You throw the favorite out. Yeah, exactly. So, Bruce, real quick before we got to head into another break, I want to know, you're talking about those pin placements. Now, I believe they moved it closer to the front of the green in a couple of the holes, but what are some key holes today that they're the change in pin placement or this the hole in general that's going to play a major factor in who comes out the winner today?
I would say 17. It is 17 and 11. 11 is the toughest. Is the toughest hole on the back, and 17. Whoever wins 17, whoever can make the big par putt or make birdie on 17 is going to have the big edge going into 18.
All right, there it is. Bruce Hall live from Augusta down there at the Masters. We'll be back with some more of Bruce as we get into some MLB action on the other side. You're listening to News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Baseball season has officially kicked off. We're officially underway. We're starting to figure out who are the good teams, who are the bad teams. One of the very good teams this year hails from Washington, D.C. They are the Washington Nationals, but they seem to have a little hiccup. I guess the Atlanta Braves are officially the Washington Nationals' daddy, having won 17 of the last 24 games. So, Bruce, I want to play this clip. New York fans will definitely remember this. But this when I watch the Washington Nationals, all I hear are the chants of "Who's your daddy?" So, Atlanta. What is it with the Atlanta Braves and the Washington Nationals, and how has Atlanta been so successful against this Washington Nationals team over the last two seasons, taking, like what I said, 17 of the last 24 games?
Well, you know, they don't have a better group of personnel than Washington. You can argue that their pitching has been better for the last couple of years. You can definitely say it last year because last year they destroyed the Washington, but, you know, even this year, they still have their good sixth, seventh inning guys. They've got their good eighth inning guy, and they've got the top closer in the league, right-hand closer in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard to beat, you know. B.J. Upton doesn't do anything for 3 weeks, and they play the Nats, and he hits a 430-run bomb. I mean, you know, it's just the way it is. It looks like, I mean, I'm not really that worried about the Nats. That East division of the National League is going to be an interesting thing to watch all year because even the Mets are going to at times look like they can beat a lot of teams, and then at times they look disoriented. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've got some really good starting pitching. The Mets' problem is their pen. Parnell is out for indefinitely. They really don't know if they've got a closer. They don't know if they want to spend any money for one or trade for one. They talk this mean 90-win game, you know, 90-win season early, you know, before the season started.
Right.
But you're not going to win 90 games if you don't have at least a closer who can get you 40, you know, saves. I just don't see the Mets, in there. But Atlanta is always going to have a shot as long as they've got those all-stars. You know, as much as Justin Upton doesn't look great to me.
Mm-hmm.
But they're paying him great. They're paying his brother BJ great.
Yeah.
And they're getting it done. It's hard to explain, but they're getting it done. You know, they paid Freddie Freeman all of his money. He's locked up for several years. The more I see Freddie Freeman, the more I see a bigger, stronger, their former third baseman, Chipper Jones. I mean, he's got Chipper's swing. He's just 35, 40 pounds heavier than Chipper.
Mm-hmm.
Knocks the living crap out of the ball. Now, they've had some injuries on their pitching staff, but as they get better, if they can beat Washington with everybody injured, imagine what it's going to be like when they get everybody healthy.
So sticking in New York, the New York Yankees are starting to make waves. They're starting to become the Bronx Bombers. They had 5 home runs in a game yesterday against the Boston Red Sox. How much of a threat, if this Yankees team can wake up and they can wake up their bats? They had 7 home runs up to the date, and then they hit 5 yesterday against the Red Sox. How much of a threat can this Bronx Bombers team be if they can wake up their bats?
Well, listen, if they can play home run derby and get some pitching, they don't even have to play great defense. I mean, they have guys that can mix and match. You know, they're keeping Ichiro just for defense, basically. And Ichiro Suzuki is still almost an all-star caliber defensive player. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When he's in the game, Roy, I mean, you know, you don't have to worry about him making the play. They got Gardner. They've got the great center fielder that they stole from the Red Sox. I mean, you know, these guys are going to be tough. It's all about pitching. It's not all about pitching with the Yankees. What it's all about is just keeping everybody healthy. If they keep everybody healthy, they're going to win 90 games this year. I really think they will. I think the Yankees may end up being the biggest surprise in the American League this year. I really do.
Speaking of keeping people healthy, the Boston Red Sox, Yankees rivalry, it's obviously probably the biggest rivalry in sport, in baseball, one of the bigger rivalries in sports, and we have the farewell tour this year of Derek Jeter. Now, Derek Jeter was a healthy scratch yesterday against the Boston Red Sox, and it's been a big fuss that a lot of fans wanted to see Jeter on their farewell tour against one of the last times he's going to play the Boston Red Sox. How do you feel about this topic of keeping Jeter out as a healthy scratch against the Red Sox, knowing that this farewell tour is going on?
Well, until Derek starts hitting the baseball, as a baseball coach, you know, I understand what the coach is looking at anyway. I mean, I don't think him playing too much is the reason he's not hitting. I think that he's just losing his edge at the plate. I think people are finding out where they need to, you know, they've always known where to pitch cheat and get him out. You gotta hammer him inside, because he stays inside the ball and goes the other way with the pitch when he can get his arms extended.
Mm-hmm.
But Cheat's got to play short too, you know, and he's not always their best option defensively anymore. So, you know, I think Girardi's the perfect guy for the job, because Girardi knows Derek better than anybody. Girardi and Derek, you know, a lot of people will tell you this, they're good friends. I mean, it's hard not to be good friends with Derek Jeter if you're a nice guy. And Girardi is a good guy. He understands his players. He's going to make sure that Derek gets his rest. But I think that with Derek, it's not even so much about making sure he plays 140 games or even 135. I think with Cheat, it's about keeping him healthy and getting him at least 115, 120 games. I think if he gets the 115, 120, that's plenty for Cheat. I think it is. Because, you know, you could have made an argument that he was done after last year, Roy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think that this is just his way of saying goodbye. Plus, he's going to pass a few guys. He just passed somebody on the hit list. And, you know, I hope he passes one or two more. I really do, because I think that, you know, he's one of the greatest players we ever had a chance to. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, Jeter doesn't do anything that's a 10, except be a teammate,
mm-hmm.
Okay? He's an 8. You know, hitting the ball, he's a 7 or an 8. Base running, he's probably a 6 or a 7. Defensively, he's probably a 6 or a 7. But what he did was, he, like Cal Ripken, he showed up all the time, scored a lot of runs, and he was there for his teammates every day, every single day for his teammates. And no matter what you think about the Yankees or Jeter, you got to give him his props. What a great player he's been.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that he's on his farewell tour. Great, yeah, absolutely a great player. He's the captain. He's gonna go down. He will definitely get the number two. Retired there in New York. But we can't talk about the MLB without talking about the biggest surprise of this early season, that being the Milwaukee Brewers. What is the secret behind the Brew Crew and off to their best start in baseball?
Well, you know what's funny? We interviewed John Nairn. When I say we, I interviewed John Nairn, my former suite mate at East Carolina University, about 4 weeks ago. And it was no surprise to me at all after watching the Brew Crew in spring training, taking their licks in the cages, doing all of their drills, watching three or four of their games when I was in Arizona. You know me, Roy. I don't like the Brewers because I hate Bud Selig.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what they say, Bud Selig is part of the Brew Crew. But the fact that John Nairn is involved with the hitters on this team, and Ron Renicky, God bless that guy. You know, Bochy picked him as an assistant coach last year for the All-Star game, because he has all the respect in the world for Ron Renicky. They're doing this with a very small payroll, and they're doing it with kind of a different put-together pitching lineup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Their starters are good, but they're not great. But they're going to get better, and they have some youth in their organization. I mean, and you got to love a team that has a second baseman named Scooter. I mean, come on, Scooter. I'm pretty sure Milwaukee's in first place, or they're right there with St. Louis right now. But, I don't even pay attention to wins and losses this early in the season, because nothing means anything until the All-Star break, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, Bruce, we'll be right back. We'll get our picks in the next segment, so make sure you guys stick around for that. But right now, for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We'll be right back. This is News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Baseball is in full effect, and we got a good crop of games going today, and we're going to get into our MLB picks here in just a second. So, Bruce, heading into today and heading into the next couple weeks, Washington Nationals place Ryan Zimmerman on the 15-day DL with a fractured thumb. They're going to have a lot of injury problems. The Yankees are up and down with their long balls and defense. The Milwaukee Brewers are coming out of nowhere. Who is a team that you like going forward that could potentially upset some people or pull this thing out that is flying under the radar?
Well, I mean, it's not that they're under the radar so much, but they still haven't made the move, and that's in the American League. It's the Kansas City Royals. I mean, in my opinion, the Kansas City Royals have four or five of the best players in baseball. Now, a couple of them, and they're young, and they're going to get better. Their staff is strong. They're in a division where they can make a difference, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I like the Royals. I really do. Early on, I liked the Orioles. I just can't figure out what they're doing right now. They've got, like I said, it's early. I just think the Yankees are going to win more than everybody thought.
Mm-hmm.
We went over the over-unders, the Vegas over-unders, a couple weeks ago. And, there were three or four teams that I liked going over, obviously. One of them wasn't. Everybody expects Washington to be there. I think Washington is going to have some problems this year. I mean, if they get another key player hurt, now they can replace Ryan Zimmerman's glove, and they can replace his throwing arm, obviously, but they can't replace what he does with the bat year in, year out. I mean, the guy is every year 25 home run, 90 RBI guy, and you can put him 2, 3, or 4, or even 5. In a 5-hole in the order, and he's going to give you what you want. Bryce Harper finally is starting to hit the ball a little bit. I sent Rizzo an email or somebody, Rizzo and somebody else, saying that to me it looks like he has too much bat in his hand. I think he lifted a lot of weights. He might have gone to a little heavier bat thinking he could swing it. Just because you look like a brick poop house, I almost said a bad word, doesn't mean that you're going to have any more bat speed. Sometimes you're better off being looser, you know, having more flexibility with your bat speed. And but he started to look a little bit better. Made a couple of errors early in the year. You know, looking at all these teams, I mean, the Colorado Rockies are showing that they can play with anybody, and they've got a small payroll. There aren't really a lot of teams that are out of it. Philadelphia is not going to be there when it's all over in the East, in the National League East. They're done. Miami's going to get a little bit better, but they're not going to make the moves. Now, I think, Roy, to answer your question again, Kansas City Royals. I think they're going to probably surprise. They may make the playoffs as a wild card.
So, Bruce, are you ready to run down some of these picks today? Are you ready? You ready to give the world what they need to know?
Let's do that, and then I want you to go to Bovada, and let's do the Masters first, real quick.
You want to do the Masters first?
Well, no. You know what? Go ahead and do baseball because I know you got it up.
Yeah, I already got baseball. Throw me curveballs over here already. All right, so the Philadelphia Phillies. I'm mixing football and baseball together. They're just one big crap hole over in Philadelphia.
Are you old enough to remember Jeff Fegels, the kicker
for the Eagles? Of course I am, yeah. The Philadelphia Phillies are at home against the Miami Marlins today. Kendrick's on the mound for the Phillies, Alvarez for the Marlins. Who are you like in that game?
You know what? If Jimmy Rollins hit a bomb the walk-off yesterday, he could hit another one today. I'm taking the Phillies, but I hate Kendrick. God. I'm going to pass. I'm not stupid.
The Atlanta Braves are at home against the Washington Nationals looking for the clean sweep. It is Herring and Gio Gonzalez on the mound for the Nationals. Who are you liking that one?
Nats win. Gio goes yard.
Gio goes yard. There it is. The Milwaukee Brewers are at home against the Pittsburgh P-Funks. It is Loesch versus Morton. Who are you liking that game?
I'm taking Loesch, baby. Why wouldn't I? They're on fire.
Yeah.
Fire. They are on fire.
St. Louis, the St. Louis Cardinals are throwing Waka Flocka Flame. They're taking on the Chicago Cubs and Edwin Jackson. Who are you liking that one?
How can you bet? That's, you know, I bet that's -180 on the road. I'm going to take St. Louis.
Yeah, minus 240.
But Edwin Jackson will get a hit and steal a base.
You got your Giants is throwing Hudson. They're taking on Chatwood and the Colorado Rockies and company, I guess. They threw six pitchers yesterday. So who you like in that game?
Chatwood's coming off the DL. He's on, like, one of my big-time box score teams, although he's not activated. He's still on my bench. I'm going to take the Giants. Huddy's on fire, man. Tim Hudson may be an all-star this year.
Next up, we have the Arizona Diamondbacks taking on the Dodgers. They have Cahill is throwing it for the D-backs, and Dan Heron throwing for the Dodgers out west. Who do you like?
I'm taking Cahill just because I hate the Dodgers. I'm passing on the game, you know that.
Yeah, the Orioles are throwing Ubaldo Jimenez. Yes, he's still in the league. This game is moving lines. It's jumping back and forth. It was Orioles -10. It just switched over to the Jays -110. So and the Jays are throwing Burley. So who do you like in this game?
Pass. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, nobody seems to really like that game. It's jumping around. So the Minnesota Twins, they are throwing Korea, and the Kansas City Royals are on the road in Minnesota, and they are throwing Vargas.
Take Jason Vargas. He's going to be an all-star. I love him.
The Chicago White Sox, they not looking very good this year, but they are throwing Quintanilla. And the Cleveland Indians, our boy Tony Mazur, they are throwing Kluber. Who do you like in that game?
You know, I'm not a big Kluber fan, but since Tony's coming on the show later to talk a little bit about Johnny Manziel and the Cleveland politics, the political machine, I'm going to go with Cleveland.
All right, there it is. Cleveland Indians, they're getting a win. So the Texas Rangers are next. They are hosting the Houston Astros. The Rangers are throwing Perez, and the Astros are throwing former National Ubenholzer. Who are you liking that one?
take Oberholzer. He's a great player. He'll get it done somehow. He'll pitch like six innings, give up three runs. Houston's got a little better team than everybody thinks.
Yeah, Houston. Look at that. They're hanging around that 500 mark. Next up, we got the Seattle Mariners, and they are throwing Young against the Oakland Athletics, and they are throwing Kazmir.
Yeah, Scott Kazmir looked good last time out. I'm going to pass on the game because that's another one of those surprise teams right now. Mm-hmm. Seattle Mariners are doing everything that they thought they were going to do last year, but getting it done this year, especially with the bats.
Next up, the Cincinnati Reds. They are throwing...
Kingrani.
Yep, Kingrani. That's a name that I do not know how to pronounce. They are taking on the Tampa Bay Rays and Ramos. Who you like there?
Is that in Tampa, Roy?
No, it's in Cincinnati.
I'm taking Cincinnati. Because Cingrani is—he's an all-star pitcher. I mean, this kid's pretty good. What's his ERA? It's probably.
I don't have his ERA pulled up right here on this this betting site.
It's 1.80, something like that. Go ahead.
So it's not bad. It's not a bad ERA at all. Next up, we got the Angels, and they are throwing Wilson against the New York Mets, throwing Colon. Who do you like there?
Wilson coming back, but how can you go against Jabba the Hutt? I'm taking Bartolo today. I'm taking Bartolo Colon because his separated at birth identical twin, a guy by the name of Miguel Angel Jimenez, who you can see twerking with his golf clubs online. All you got to do is put warm up, Miguel on health. He reminds me so much of Colon. I swear, they look like twins.
So we got the San Diego Padres are playing host to the Detroit Tigers. The Padres are throwing Ross, and the Detroit Tigers are throwing Scherzer. Who you like in that matchup?
You know, I got to take Scherzer. Detroit's going to win. They won yesterday too, right? Verlander won.
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody goes into San Diego and has fun in the gas lamp district. I don't see Detroit having any less fun than anybody else.
Yeah, Verlander got the win yesterday. He went 2-for-3 on the day from the plate and got his first major league base hit in the game. So
great. Yeah. Congratulations, Justin. You're almost as good as your little brother now.
That's right. So, and then the last game of the day would be the New York Yankees coming off of their five home run performance taking on the Boston Red Sox. The Yanks are throwing Nova, and the Sox are throwing DuBront. Who you like in that matchup?
You know what? I'm not a big DuBront fan. I'm gonna take the Yankees. I just think the Yankees are going to put together, you know, the weather's getting warm. They're mm-hmm. going to start scoring double figures here probably twice a week in the near future. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get Derek his rest. They're going to get Beltran his rest. They're going to get everybody their rest, and everybody's going to be happy. And when they go to the plate, they're going to be swinging. They're not going to be walking.
All right. So if there's a game today that you like more than others, who's that baseball game today that people got to look out for?
God, that's a tough one. Probably Milwaukee. I like the Brewers. I just think they're on a roll. Plus, Kyle Loesch is pitching well. So I like them. You know, and I'll tell you what, I do like the Mets. But I don't think I'd play them for much. I think I'd take it easy with them.
All right, so now we're going to move on to the Masters tournament here. The odds to win the Masters are pretty much dead even.
I'm going to give you the guys, and I want you to tell me what their odds are. You ready?
Give me 1 second. The website that I'm on right now doesn't have it. But give me a couple guys. And I'll look him up for you here. But
you can probably get Jordan Spieth right now at 1 or 5 to 1. I'd take him. I'll bet you Kuchar. I bet Bubba Watson's team. He's probably 1 to 1 or 4 to 5 just because it's Bubba. Pass on the favorite just like you would at the Kentucky Derby, people. Matt Kuchar's probably 3 to 1 or 5 to 2. I'd take him for a little bit. Do you want my big play?
Sure.
There's two of them. Gary Woodland, I picked him yesterday to win it. He went to 4 under after 6 holes, and he started the day 3 over. And then he ended up finishing up minus 2 for the day. I'm sorry, finished even for the day.
Mm-hmm.
I take Woodland. I guarantee you he's 20 to 1 or 20. 25-1. Take him for a little bit and take Jimmy Furyk. And I'll bet you Jimmy Furyk, who right now is three strokes back, is probably at least 5-1. I'm going to call right now, I think, Jimmy Furyk, Matt Kuchar, and Jordan Spieth will be in a three-way playoff on number 18, where I'll be sitting on 18 tee box.
So here's the props, the final three props that I see on the day. Bubba Watson is the top prop at +275 to win. Spieth +350, and your boy Kuchar is +400 on the odds that I have here.
Kuchar's a good play. That's 4-1 odds, man. That's
so
good.
Yeah, there. That's your boy right there, Kuchar, +400. So we'll be right back to Snooze Talk 1230 WFAS.
Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were. And we let him off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Trying to get our two boys ready to carry them to the golf tournament for practice, right? 12 cats live across the road. Our door's open. Screen's broke. We need to get a new screen door, but the screen's broke. So you come in through the screen, but you can't get back out of it. I turn and look. There's a little kitty cat in our kitchen. So I said, what are you doing in here, little kitty cat? By that time, the cat turns, tries to get back out. That screen won't go that way. Cat starts going, meow, all crazy. And I told our players, we need more dogs. Bo's barking in the back. I have to go shut Bo up. Mel's like, what's going on? I said, is the cat in the house? Cat in the house? I said, yeah, there's a cat in the house. So I told our players, I tried to let it out the front door. Meow, meow. The cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes.
Is this great?
Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
That is the Coastal Carolina head football coach talking about how he doesn't want any cats, but he wants more dogs during their spring football practice a day ago. Apparently, there are some teams around the NCAA, around college football, who do want more cats. And they do want more cats at their spring game. That being Bo Pelini and the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I have now Mr. Brandon Cavanaugh of Rant Sports to talk about Nebraska and Bo Pelini's cat, believe it or not. Now, Brandon, this kind of all started with a Twitter feud between a fake Bo Pelini account and Bo Pelini himself. Can you give us a little bit of a backstory of how this cat came to play in the Nebraska football program?
That was hilarious, by the way. I was cracking up just about to pee myself. But yeah, and actually, currently with HuskerCorner.com, by the way, but that's okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. No offense taken. I'm not going to hang up on you. No, the way it started was a long time ago. Not really a long time ago, but at least a year or two, Faux Pelini came along, you know, Bo Pelini, Faux Pelini. It was a parody account. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've talked to the guy. We've had conversations. I've interviewed him. He did a Reddit AMA, and it just blew up, and he never thought it would become this big. And then one day here, I believe it was this year, Bo actually tweeted at the parody account, and everybody goes nuts. And there was a back and forth over this cat, because if you look on Twitter at Faux Pelini's biopic, mm-hmm. It's a shot picture of him in one of those Christmas photos with a cat. He's in a sweater. And then that, of course, just kind of came the joke from there. It's like, haha, Bo Pelini, who's a hothead, you know, holding a cat. That's funny, or whatever. And then now it's been embraced to the point where, you know, we knew something was going to happen. You know, obviously last year you weren't really going to touch anything with what happened with Jack Hoffman. But when everybody saw Bo Pelini coming out with a real-life cat, who I'm assuming was just skirt out of its skin. And everything it was saying, just people flipped. And the thing is, it's like we saw Cliff Kingsbury do his dance off and everything, but it is so interesting to see social media transcend to real life like that, at least for me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to touch on next, was the Texas Tech head coach having the dance-off. They did a bull in the ring where your traditional bull of the ring is players hitting each other. Well, this coach decided to have a dance-off. Then you have the Coastal Carolina coach going off about cats. You have Bo Pelini bringing his cat out. You have the Penn State, their new head coach running the score up on his own team, 37-0. I mean, for you, what's the best storyline of this young spring season for college football?
Well, and the thing that a lot of people will tell you, a lot of coaches will tell you, is this is a scrimmage. It's just a lot of scrimmages. And I think, and this will probably sound biased, but I think Nebraska has the right amount of, they're going towards more entertainment than football. They're going less of a football light and more of a WrestleMania almost. You come for the scrimmage and the kids get their autographs and they get their pictures taken with their heroes, but at the same time, everybody can enjoy the drills. Former Husker offensive tackle Jeremiah Searles proposed to his fiance. She said yes, so that's a plus. And have the situations with the cats, and then Kenny Bell, wide receiver Kenny Bell, and Bo had a pass competition. So you've got that. And a lot of people have said throughout Twitter and on the internet in general that, quote, to paraphrase, I guess, Nebraska wins spring football yet again. So you have Nebraska's take on it, and then you have, I think James wanted to, or Coach Franklin at Penn State, he wanted to establish himself. He wanted to show, what he's about. He's got a vicious attitude to him. I don't think he was trying necessarily to make anybody feel bad or put anybody in a bad mindset, but, he just wanted to show, it's like, hey, I'm here. I'm not, this is what we're about. We're going to have a good time, and we're going to get back to where we rightfully belong, which would be great for the Big Ten. In terms of, some of the other ones I saw with Notre Dame, I kind of caught up a little bit. I'm very interested in that with Everett Golston and Malik Zaire. Zaire was actually a recruit that Nebraska was going after. I think he's going to have a pretty good career, obviously. Who knows at this point? James Winston, yeah, I think he's going to be okay for a while. But, everybody else, it's just kind of like, okay, we're having a scrimmage and we're trying to legitimize it and getting some money off of it. And, there are schools, the football hungry schools like Nebraska, obviously, that will feed off of it. And for a long time, Nebraska just did the football stuff and that was fine. But it's been really fun to see them implement a little bit more entertainment.
So you touched on Golston a little bit and you mentioned Jameis Winston. Now, Winston, he threw 57 passes. He said that's more passes than he's thrown pitches this in a game this season for the baseball team, as he is still a member. He's the closer of the Florida State baseball team. So he had seemed a little rusty, and Golston came out and kind of cemented himself as a very, very good quarterback that could have this Notre Dame team contending again. Which quarterback do you think is more ready right now? Is it this Golston, who's had an entire offseason to get ready and kind of lead and turn around this Notre Dame team? Or is it the Winston, who has spent most of the offseason playing baseball?
This is the question? No, I kid.
No, it's obviously a loaded question for you.
Yeah. I mean, between Golston and Winston, I'm going to take Winston every day and twice on Saturday.
That's right, yeah.
That's just, he is such an amazing talent. Menziel, we all saw Menziel, love or hate him. He just had this amazing athletic ability. And I think Winston has that as well. I think it's different. I think it's a different athletic ability, but it's just as fun to watch. I mean, I go back and watch this past season's national championship game, and it was an amazing game, and it was about Winston. I mean, what a great freshman season? Yeah, what a great freshman season to come in and have an undefeated season, national championship, and win the Heisman Trophy. Yeah, that's not a bad year.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's a little rusty. Okay, well, he's been on the baseball diamond. He's getting back used to, you know, playing the game that he's probably meant to play, you know, at Florida State. But I wouldn't really worry about it. I mean, you get him in there in the fall, you get him throwing spirals again, and you get him in there in the early non-conference season. You know, he'll knock anything off, and he'll be back to making defense coordinators and ACC defense coordinators pull their hair out in no time.
Yeah, I just love that anytime the Golden Domers have a quarterback who can throw 30 yards and a complete pass in the preseason, all of a sudden they're supposed to be a top five team. I love the comparisons between Golson and Winston this early simply because Winston's been on a baseball diamond. So I think it's hilarious, but yeah, I mean, you got to take the guy with the trophy. You got they're the national champs.
He's the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah. It's funny. It's laughable, but that's college football for you. But real quick, as we near a break, I wanted to get your opinion on an article that's been floating around. I'm sure you've read it. It's the SB Nation article about the contributors, the boosters who are paying players. Obviously, this isn't really a secret, but when you pair this going along with the union talks, what do you think is the outcome between these paying players that has been going around, and then now you have the Northwestern team, who's a Big Ten team, who wants to unionize? What do you think is the future of college football?
Well, it's hard to say, and the other thing to remember, I think a lot of people are forgetting this, is that we're talking about a private institution in Northwestern, and that's kind of what we're working with right now is private institutions. But the fact of the matter is, bag men are always going to be around, regardless of the situation. And I think this was talked about in the actual article, that regardless of if you are paid X amount, there's always a few thousand that can go on top of that. Or, you know, mom at home can be paid a few thousand if she can get a job, or et cetera, et cetera. There are always benefits on top of benefits. I mean, you tell me, if you're doing a good job and your boss says, okay, it's time for a bonus, are you going to turn it down?
Right.
If there's some way, shape, or form. So I think... yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic article, and please, you know, SB Nation, read it if you haven't. And it's very interesting in terms of the insight. I learned some stuff, actually, that I hadn't thought about before.
Right, yeah, great stuff. Yeah. And Brandon, I want to thank you for coming on. We're up against that break. Read his stuff. He's at Husker Corner. Thank you, Brandon, for coming on. But for the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm going to touch on some more college sports, including a very small New York team who just won a national championship on the other side. This is News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Big thanks to Brandon Cavanaugh coming on last segment. Make sure you check all his stuff out. He is at Husker Corner. Very good guy. He used to be a member of SMC, and I guess he has moved on to bigger and better things, but it's always great to catch up with him and what he does with the Huskers over there at Husker Corner. Great stuff. But now I want to get into some more college talk, and I want to surround it around New York. Yes, I know we're on in New York, and you guys, last week I brought you Albany Lacrosse, and their guy, Miles Thompson, and Lyles, his brother, and the great thing that Dings did.
They got an update that their attendance doubled to 14 because of you.
Well, there you go. Well, I mean, they were a top 20 lacrosse team, and of course, I talk about them, they lose and they drop out of the top 25, but still a very good lacrosse team. They should make the tournament. I mean, they got good enough players to make the tournament. So guys, go out there and support your Albany lacrosse team, because you have a very, very special player in Miles Thompson. But now I want to get into another local New York team, this being Union College. Union College just won the Frozen Four, which is the Hockey National Championship. Their run through this championship was incredible. Okay, not only did they beat Boston College to get to the championship, but they just knocked off number one seeded Minnesota for the championship. I mean, this team, they had a Campini, he had a hat trick against Boston College with scoring the final goal in an open netter. And then they have a guy by the name of Shane Ghostin Behear. I hope I'm saying your name right, because hockey names I never get along with.
It's pronounced Thompson.
Yeah, Shane. Shane, I'm going to call you Shane. But this guy, he's the only player for Union that is going on to play for the NHL, or I should say was drafted. He was drafted by the Philadelphia Flyers, and he was the only he's the only player on Union to do so. Union defeated. They knocked off Minnesota 5-4, I believe, was the final score. They were up 5-3. Six to four was the final score for Union College. Union College, they were the number three team in the country. But so knocking off number one Minnesota doesn't seem like that big of a stretch when you talk about the rankings. But this school, okay, they're known as the Dutchmen, are one of the better college stories in that I've heard in a long time. I mean, when you think about college athletics and you think about the big time college athletics, you think about college football. College football is just now getting into this plus system. This year will be the first year that we have four football teams competing for that number one spot. And you're already starting to hear people talk about who they think should end up in those four team playoff. I don't know how spring, I mean, spring football is here. Like, where everyone's getting excited about it. We just had Brandon on to talk about a little bit of the season and preview it. But there is no reason why we should be able to pick those four teams or even really begin the conversation of picking those four teams at this point in the season. The season hasn't even started yet. We haven't even played a game. We haven't even played a snap of football, and people are already talking about how it's going to be Florida State, it's going to be Oregon, it's going to be Alabama, and maybe Oklahoma. I don't know how you can even begin to throw these teams out there. Sure, we can predict things and we can talk about this, but there is no reason why college football should work that way. It's all about preseason voting plays such a high importance into the ranking system and into the old BCS system that thank God we're out of. It's played such a high ranking that it kind of separated itself in a very negative way from all of the other college athletics. Then you look at college basketball that has a beautiful system in what they do in allowing 68 teams, you know, but we still don't see a story like this Union College that is a relatively unknown. It gives the small schools something to really cheer about. I mean, it's an absolutely great, it's just a great story, knocking off Minnesota. So shout out to the Dutchmen, and that is my New York College story for the week. Maybe next week we'll have another one for you, but so we have Albany last week, and they dropped off the charts. So I can't jinx Union College this week because they already won the national championship. So this is just something that hockey does right. They get a true playoff system in place. They have the Frozen Four. They make a big deal out of it, and they go through and they battle it out to find out who the champion is. College football is starting to get this trend. They'll have four teams this year, as I mentioned. So thank God football is starting to make the right moves. But I just don't understand how you have so many other good things about college athletics. There is 16 teams that make the NCAA lacrosse tournament every year. With those 16 teams, you're going to find out who the best team in the country is. The season's long enough to where you can narrow those 16 teams down and then start a playoff system. I believe it's D1AA college football, they have a playoff system of 16 teams. Okay, so it can be done with the college football scene. You look at college baseball, it's probably one of the best events that the college athletics has to offer. I mean, you have March Madness, which I'm a hoop head, and shout out to the UConn Huskies, the men and the women, which I called, by the way. I had them beating Florida. I had them winning the national championship over Kentucky because I believed that we were going to finally see freshmen become freshmen, and that's exactly what happened. Kentucky came out slow, and Shabazz Napier and Boatwright and Daniels of UConn, they showed up. They showed what experience can do as, again, Shabazz Napier and Niles Gafai, they're both members of that NCAA championship tournament team under Jim Calhoun. I believe it was back in 2011. So he gets his championship ring as a freshman. He gets it again as a senior to wrap up the basketball season. So basketball, the March Madness tournament does it right. They do it right, and they get everyone involved, and everyone goes crazy over it. And this is another sport, hockey, that I absolutely love. If you're a hockey fan and you don't watch the Frozen Four, you're missing out because you see some great action. We had two Cinderella stories in that tournament with Union College winning it all. Although, again, they were the number three team in the country, but a small school, and you love to see that, knocking off Minnesota, who has multiple NHL players. They got multiple guys who are going to go pro. Same with Boston College, who they beat earlier in the week to go into the championship. Boston College has multiple guys who are drafted into the NHL. And North Dakota was the other team in the Frozen Four. They were the number 14-ranked team in the country going in. And they lost in a way that to Minnesota that is just heartbreaking. They were tied 1-1. Minnesota got a goal about halfway through the third period. North Dakota scores, answered is about a minute and a half later. And people are going nuts. North Dakota are winding down. It looks like that they're going to force overtime with Minnesota. And Minnesota scores with 0.6 seconds left. So an absolute heartbreaker to ending that Cinderella story. But glad to see at least one Cinderella story run through and hold the trophy with Union College. So congratulations to them. So as we move near to the next great NCAA playoff team playoff system, it's not college football. It is the College World Series. And I had a chance to sit down and talk to Kenny Towns of UVA Baseball. UVA, depending on the ranking system, there are multiple ranking systems that go out with college baseball. One of the things that I don't like about college baseball, but I do love the College World Series and regionals and the playoff system that runs through the summer, that's absolutely awesome. But I had a chance to talk to Kenny Towns and talked about Virginia baseball and what they're doing. They are finishing up a series with Clemson University this weekend, and as we all know, Florida State is in Atlanta this weekend playing Georgia Tech, because we all saw the Florida State, or at least have seen highlights of the Florida State spring game that has Jameis Winston throwing 57 passes because they really wanted to get as much work in as possible in that spring game, and then having to fly back to Atlanta. So the College Baseball World Series is just around the corner, and Kenny Towns of Virginia said that Virginia is focused. They have it in their mindset. I asked them, I said, do you guys put the College World Series on your mind now? We got a couple months away. It starts in June. But are you guys thinking about it now? He says, absolutely, we're thinking about it. We might not put it in the forefront, but that's the goal. That's been the goal all along. So Virginia is a team that is on a mission, much like that UConn Huskies team was this season with Shabazz Napier, talking about how they are going to be champions and that they wanted the championship. They didn't care about individualized awards, that they wanted that national championship, and they ended up getting it. They were a team on a mission all tournament, and you could obviously see that just sitting through the press conference and interviewing the guys. Now I'm interviewing some baseball players with UVA, and they had that same mission. So look out for Virginia going through the stretch in the ACC. We'll be right back on the other side. We'll have Tony Mazur on to talk about the Cleveland Browns and a little bit of Johnny Manziel action. This is News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We are joined now by my favorite Cleveland radio personality, and I believe he is a burger blogger, writing about cheeseburgers and hamburgers, which...
Really?
I don't know why we haven't talked about this before.
You caught my attention.
Because I love cheeseburgers and grilling in general, and the spring weather outside. I know that we were going to talk about football or something sports related, but I want to open up with this because the weather is absolutely gorgeous outside. I don't know what it's like in Cleveland where it's always, you know, 60 and overcast, but here where I am, it's 80 degrees and it's beautiful out, and the first thing that I want to do is fire up the grill. So as a burger blogger, Tony, I ask you, what are the secrets to grilling this season? What's the burger that I need to try out?
Preferably one that's ground meat, and you put it on the grill, and you cook it to your liking, and then you put it on a bun, and then there you go.
There it is.
I think that's the secret.
That's the professional advice right there.
All right, Tony, I get out to Columbus a lot. I know there's some proximity there. Do you have a specific place to recommend for a burger in Columbus?
Yes, go to the Thurman Cafe.
Thurman Cafe. I will take you up on that when I go out there next.
I think Adam Richman was there for, but yeah, I go to Columbus. It's like my home away from home, and I'm down there all the time. And it's the place where, like, there's a big rock concert I go to every year, big rock festival. And afterward, it's like, you know, just out in the sun drinking all day. So it's like, you know what, let's get our old hangover preventer and going to the Thurman Cafe to this enormous hamburger.
All right.
Yeah. Next time I make it into Ohio, I'll hit that place up. I went to Tasty Burgers last time I was in Boston. That place was pretty good. And then around here we have Five Guys. I'm not sure if you guys have Five Guys there or not, but they're starting to blow up everywhere.
Five Guys is everywhere here.
Yeah. So they're blowing up. But now you talked about Columbus being your home away from home, but your true home is Cleveland. And they're making headlines all around pretty much everywhere these days. NFL, college football, even the movies, they're making headlines. So I guess the appropriate place to start is, have you seen the Draft Day movie? And if so, is it amazing?
Well, I have not seen it yet. I plan on, because I have no life, tomorrow I'm probably going to go catch a matinee of it and probably promptly rip on it and live tweet it while I'm in the movie theater. Hey, no spoilers, man. Don't give away any spoilers. And, but all I know is from the movie, I've heard mixed reviews. If you're a Browns fan, you love it. If you're not a Browns fan, I've heard it's a little far-fetched, but I don't know any of the details. That's my uneducated, what I've gathered. I'm like my own Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, man. So
aggregate all the reviews.
A little far-fetched, as in the Browns are actually a winning program. Is that the far-fetchedness of it?
Yes, precisely, yes.
Well, Kevin Costner, if he can't turn the Browns around, then nobody can. That's kind of how
I mean about it.
It's
proven that nobody can turn around the Browns. So, not even Kevin Costner, not Chuck Norris, Steven Seagal, nobody.
So I guess that opens up the next question is, who has the better year in 2014? Is it the movie Draft Day and Cleveland Browns, or is it these NFL real-life Cleveland Browns?
You know, that's what's interesting is, from what I've seen, it's basically you're looking at a fictional season. Like, is this real life? You see it in the regular season and you see it in the movie. Is this real life? And chances are, no, it's not. So
I think both
I think they're going to be both the same there.
Both could actually sweep the Razzies this year.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, perfect score on each.
Well, another thing we don't know, speaking of that movie and the future of the Cleveland Browns, is what the Cleveland Browns are doing with their draft pick, as they have refused to show up at multiple practices, or I should say pro days, for these players that are going to be drafted. They didn't show up at Clowney's. They didn't show up at Manziel's. I heard mixed reports. I heard that they didn't show up at Bortles, and then I heard that they did show up at Bortles. So what is the purpose of this not showing your cards? And in that, who do you believe that Cleveland is actually trying to protect, or that they're going to draft, or who they are going to draft?
I think they're looking at quarterback right now. I think with the Wunderlich scores coming out and showing the Manziel actually had the higher Wunderlich than Bridgewater and Bortles and some of these other guys.
Yeah.
I think they're looking at quarterback. Who do I want? And I've been saying this all along. I would like Manziel. I really do. I loved what he did at his pro day. The Browns didn't go to the pro day. And from what I have gathered, it's just basically like a lame attempt at, you know, pretending not to be interested. And it's just, it's one of those like, well, you know, we could go, but it really is lame. And it's, just go to the pro day, or don't go, or whatever. Well, that makes it seem like we may not be interested, but we may very well be interested. And I'm like, you're not fooling anyone. What are you doing? And of course, they probably were sitting there in their offices here in Berea, which are the where the headquarters of the Browns are, and probably just watching on TV like every other person was during Manziel's pro day.
Yeah, I was impressed by his pro day. I know that he put on the shoulder pads and he put on the helmet, which a lot of people were surprised about, but he looked good. He completed, I believe he completed all of his passes, and he had a much better pro day than Teddy Bridgewater, who pretty much poo-pooed the bed. So ranking those three quarterbacks being Bortles, Bridgewater, and Manziel, who are your top three? I know that you said that you wanted Manziel, but who is your number one, and how are you ranking those guys?
I'm gonna go Manziel, and then a distant second, Bridgewater, then Bortles, because I haven't seen a large sample size of Bortles. Mm-hmm. And then I guess I'll throw in a fourth one and go with Garoppolo, which Everyone is going the whole, Tony Romo went there too. And I mean, he looks fine, but I'm not going to say that I saw enough of Jimmy Garoppolo during this season. Because remember, this is the time, we're less than a month away from the draft, where you have all those so-called draft experts, because They saw a clip on YouTube, and they're like, well, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, and you could see his poise, and it's like, you didn't see one damn game of his. And that's what really annoys me about this time of year, is everybody has to be a draft expert. And I was impressed with Mettenberger from LSU. I would like to see more of him. And I think he could be a guy to back up like an Aaron Rodgers or somebody who's like kind of like what Ryan Mallett has been doing up there in New England behind Tom Brady, kind of learning under the guidance of one of the best ever.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Garoppolo with the hype train that's starting to get behind him, to see how far he jumps off the draft boards. But I love the so-called draft experts that are running around. I don't know if you ever saw this, but there was a shtick that went around with New York. I don't remember who the site was, but they went around and asked fans about fictitious players. They're asking about, like, Christopher Johnson, Calvin Johnson's younger brother who was entering the draft, what you thought about him. So I love to just mess with the people and make up player names and just to see – how much that they think they know about those players. But
fifth round pick, I mean, he shows some signs, and it's like, really? Okay, he does he?
Yeah, so he exists. So you believe that this guy exists.
Yeah. That's the problem is, and I love social media, but during this time of year, it gets to the point where everyone thinks they're Todd McShay and Mel Kiper.
Yeah.
And it's like, look, I mean, they don't always get every pick right, but not everybody is a draft expert. Not everybody can sit there. And I'm not even going to pretend. I'm a football fan. I've covered football for years, but I'm not going to be that guy that when it gets to, you know, the draft starts on Thursday and Friday and into Saturday, when you get in the later rounds, I'm not going to pretend I know any of those people. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a great pick for Carolina, getting some of those late rounds. I don't know. I mean, really, like, if you know that, you probably should just get out in the sun a little bit. It's nice outside. It's 70 degrees in Cleveland. Get some sun. Get away from the Bleacher Report mock draft 28.0.
So there was an offseason move. Well, there's been multiple offseason moves by the Cleveland Browns that are good moves, you should say. They almost lost their center to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they keep him in Cleveland. There's been some great memes surrounding that, saying that it's a sad day when Jacksonville looks like the better option than Cleveland than when you're stuck in Cleveland. But so they keep him, and I believe they brought in Ben Tate, running back from the Houston Texans. So tell me a little bit about the offseason moves of the Browns and if you like them or not.
I got to say, I'm impressed so far. Ray Farmer, who was with Kansas City before, and he was going to get the job down in – basically the job was his to be the GM down in Miami. And it's like, where would you rather be? The you-know-what show that's been going on down in Miami with all the Hard Knocks and the Jonathan Martin situation and – basically everything else that's been happening with the Dolphins, or do you go with the Browns, where it's just a history and a cloud of incompetence? He decided to stick around with the Browns. They fired everybody else, and he's done a pretty good job in free agency. Like I said, Ben Tate, who I thought was a hell of a signing, because you have a kind of a thunder and lightning backfield now. Mm-hmm. Deion Lewis, who's like a Darren Sproles type of back, on top of a kind of a bruising, who Ben Tate wants to be a featured back, but you know, I don't know. I mean, he's had a history of injury, but I like the pick, and I like the pickup. Other guys, Dante Whitner, they brought in, who is actually from Cleveland, Ohio State Buckeye alum. They brought in Carlos Dansby, it really is has been a pretty successful offseason. They lost a couple. They lost T.J. Ward. They lost a couple other guys, but I mean, they're revamping, and for free agency, they did a great job. May not be Denver-esque, but they did a great job. Going into the draft, and they have two first-round picks. Yeah. They were able to get rid of Trent Richardson.
Yeah, well, maybe Kevin Costner can help them out with those first two picks now. Tony, enjoy your beautiful sunny day. Go eat some burgers and let me know how the movie was. So for the first time...
Absolutely.
Yeah, for the first time in generations. Thanks for coming on, by the way. For the first time in generations, Tony, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We'll be right back to talk some more football, baseball, and a little bit of Masters. On the other side, News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
So, as we near the finish line here on another beautiful Sunday morning, I wanted to just do a quick recap of the show and my opinions on the day. The MLB picks that we did with Bruce, I do have a couple on the day. I do believe the Washington Nationals get by the Braves today. I believe the Yankees beat the Red Sox. And I'm going to go with Bruce and say that the Milwaukee Brewers continue their 8-game win streak and push it to a 9-game win streak. Those are my three plays on the day in the MLB world. In the golf world, I'm a big golf fan. Okay, I love golf. It's become my sport, so to say. I drive by a driving range every day on the way home from work. So I stop by and I buy a large bucket and I play some golf. It's off 70, actually. So, I love it. It's my release, so to speak. I actually have a doctor's note from my doctor informing me to play more golf to lower my stress level. That is a real thing. I told him, I said, I don't think my wife will allow me to play more golf. Could you please write that down in a letter? And he did. So I have a golf note to play more golf. So thank God for that. And I am looking at Mr. Bubba Watson. I'm a huge Bubba Watson fan. I love Bubba Watson, and I love Ricky Fowler. I love the whole golf boy movement. And I don't buy this whole, if Tiger's not involved, nobody cares. That might be for the mainstream audience, you know, the Johnny Golf, you know, fan, the Johnny Golf fan over on the side who only cares what Tiger Woods does. Maybe it's true for him, but for an actual golf fan and for an actual sports fan, Tiger Woods hasn't been relevant for a couple years now. So I don't care if he's not in the Masters tournament, because my boy Bubba Watson is in the tournament, and I hope he gets a second Masters today, and I will be pulling for him. Now, as we bring on the next guest, he has a little crosstalk we got going on here. It is Chris D'Angelo of The Scorecard. They have the next hour or so of your time following Second Opinion. So as we bring in Chris, first, welcome to the show. And what are you guys talking about today?
Roy, it figures after 2 years that we've been on the radio, we finally figured out that we could call each other's show.
Yeah, did you? Yes. You know it dawned on me last week. I was like, man, who should I get? Wait, why not do some crosstalk? So, yeah, phone and the technology this day, you know, who knew that we could just call like everybody else?
It's crazy.
It's a great thing.
I never realized, but hey, look, it's good. I like doing it last week. So, yeah, back this week. And, yeah, today on the scorecard, we got, we're talking more local baseball, lacrosse, that we're in that season. It's crazy how fast it goes too. So we're going to be kind of speeding through. We're going to have, White Plains High School baseball coach on today. They had an 8-run comeback yesterday against Stepanak.
Wow.
Which is pretty crazy. So we're going to be talking about that today a little bit. And then in the 1 p.m. hour, we're going to have on Paul West from ThroughTheFenceBaseball.com talk some Yankees, Mets. And I'll be talking some Pace University baseball as well.
Very cool. So lacrosse, I'm from the DMV area. For those outside the area that don't know DMV is, it's D.C., Virginia, Maryland, and lacrosse is huge. Lacrosse rules that area. Like I grew up playing, you know, I played lacrosse year round. I played a little bit of college ball. I played college select. You know, I was a huge college, you know, or a huge lacrosse player. I had offers to play actually up north in Boston, a small school, Mount St. Ida, just to pat myself on the back a couple more times.
Yeah, right.
But how big is lacrosse in that New York area? With Syracuse, and I touched on Albany last week, having a very good lacrosse program, some of the best players in the country. How big is lacrosse in New York?
College-wise, it's pretty big. I can tell you, I definitely can tell you more about high school, because I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know a whole lot about lacrosse.
Yeah, like, no, I just mean the sport in general. I just mean the popularity of the sport in general with the, you know, with the youth, the high school level, college level, you know, all around. Just the popularity of the sport, because it is growing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like I said, as far as that stuff goes, I don't really know too much, but I can tell you one thing: this Yorktown lacrosse program up a little bit in northern Westchester,
mm-hmm.
they're one of the best teams in the state year in, year out. And lacrosse is actually very popular in Section 1, which is the local high school section around here. And we have a few teams in a few sports that could be considered one of the best in the state. But Yorktown lacrosse, year in, year out, is huge, because they're so good every single season. If they lose a game, if they lose in the game in the section, it's like a huge deal, and people are really into these games, and I could see why. Like I said, I'm not a big lacrosse guy, but I've been to a few games this season, and it's like it's cool. It's like watching, I don't know, it's like watching like a really foreign sport for me, but it's still fun to watch.
Yeah, it's fun, man. I love lacrosse. People within the sport will call it the fastest sport on two legs, because you're constantly moving. It's a lot like hockey in the air, or soccer, but less boring. So
I would just be afraid of a ball. It just seems like it's really heavy, and it would hurt if it hit.
It hurts, man. I played I played man up and man down, which is the penalties, like if penalty kill or power play. So I played on both sides of it, and I was the top right corner in the penalty kill, which mm-hmm. the majority of people are right-handed in the world, and they are shooting right at your groin. So I took multiple balls to the hips. I never got hit in the groin, thank God, but that ball hurts, man. 100% rubber. So that's how I'm able to still have kids, is because I always put one glove in front of my low section, so I could guarantee to have children.
I'm gonna have fun editing this show.
It's a fun ride. This is your best of section. This is what this is.
I'm just
is.
Gonna have you saying some horrible things that's... by the end of the day.
But Chris, before we ride out into the sunset into the scorecard, I wanted to get your opinion on a couple things that are in the New York news. First, the Derek Jeter story, where he is a healthy scratch against the Boston Red Sox during his farewell tour. People have made a big deal about that, saying that they wanted to see Derek Jeter play against the Boston Red Sox for one of the final times in his career. Is this a big deal to you?
No, because bottom line for the Yankees is that they need him in order to win this year. We talked last week about how weak their infield is. Once mm-hmm. Mark Teixeira gets hurt, you pause and you're like, okay, this is not as for a $220 million payroll team, we're not exactly as deep as we'd like to be. So you can't have Derek Jeter going out there and getting hurt. He didn't play a full season last year, not even close. He was hurt most of the season, and they really missed him. And if you go back 2 years ago and he had 216 hits, he was a major part of getting to the ALCS. So, yeah, I mean, as a fan, if I'm going to the game today and I don't get to see Derek Jeter, I'm not happy about it. But at the same time, you got to kind of take into account that they need this guy, and if he's going to go out there and get hurt, he's 38 years old. He's getting paid a ton of money this year to be, I mean, in a category where you probably wouldn't pay a guy of his caliber anymore that much money. So between that and the fact that he's Derek Jeter and you need him at the end of the season, I don't have a problem with it as a Yankee fan, but at the same time, if I was going to the game today, I'd be pissed because I probably paid like $100 to go to the game, $50 to park. You know, yeah. You don't get to see Derek Jeter play.
Yeah, as a fan, you're kind of torn. You want to see one of the greatest players who has ever put on a Yankee uniform. You want to see him ride out against the rival Red Sox, but you're going to get more opportunity. But that does suck, man, having a healthy scratch. But it happens all the time. Another big New York story surrounds the New York Knickerbockers. Okay, they are officially eliminated from the postseason, and Mr. Carmelo Anthony now enters into his offseason. So do you think the Knicks not making the postseason, do you think that's a big deal for the return or non-return of Carmelo Anthony?
Well, I think if you go back to like halfway through the season when they really were not even a consideration for the playoffs, then they got hot towards the end and then they almost competed for the eighth seed. Really, once they brought Phil Jackson in, I don't know how much that had to do with it, maybe some sort of motivation. But, I mean, Carmelo Anthony played amazing this year. Until the end, he gets hurt. He wasn't able to play as well at the end of the season. As far as him coming back, I think he's going to re-sign no matter what because I think Phil Jackson is going to be enough. I really think he's going to be enough to be able to convince him to come back. It's just the fact that he's opting out in the first place, as a fan, it's like it's hard to deal with because if he didn't opt out and he just stayed until his free agent year next year and they re-signed him the following year, they would have more room in the cap for that following year. Now that he's putting the Knicks in a tough situation this year. So, I mean, there's other places he can go. He'd be great with the Bulls, I think. I think a lot of people think that. But
well, hopefully he sticks around with you guys. Sorry to cut you off, but stick around for the scorecard. You'll get more Chris next.